Well, good afternoon. This is Glenn Coble, and you're listening to A Progressive Life. I tried to call it, what did I try to call it before? it doesn't make any difference. It's A Progressive Life. And today, we have a very special guest. Our guest today is Craig Swartz, and he has a local connection that we'll talk about a little later. But he's running for state senator. Now, not to be confused with Sherrod Brown. It's the state. It's the state senator, not the national state senator. I was always, when I was running for state representative, people, oh, you're going to be in Washington, D.C. No, no, this is the state. This is more important. So let me introduce you all. Craig Swartz, welcome aboard.
Oh, thanks, Glenn.
Oh, there we go. See, our problem with our, keep talking, because yep. I think I've lost you here. Hang on, clip there. Try again. For some reason or other.
Testing.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna have you pull that mic back to you, and see if that one works better. Okay. Yeah.
How's that?
That works a lot better. For some reason or other, we're struggling with that microphone 3. Okay. Let me give the local connection first of all, because everybody knows your brother. Right? I would assume his brother is Andrew. You know, the guy that makes all the great pastries and stuff like that. Andrew's, what is Andrew's shop name?
Andrew's Pastries.
Pastries, yeah. Yeah. And so you're his brother.
Yep. And when I was listening to your program earlier, you had mentioned that Jeff Ruth had eaten one of your fritters.
Yes, he did.
So I brought 2 more down for you.
You were fantastic. And I will probably eat that, since I don't get to eat until, I have to go to the grocery store after this. I do that now with COVID out there. Every Wednesday, if I get out to this one grocery store at about 1:30, I don't have to mess with too many people. So that's what I'm doing. Well, I'm glad to see, and I have a little bit of background, having run for state representative. State senator is basically just the other side of the aisle. Not the aisle, the other side of the, yes, it's bicameral. So yeah. It's on the other cameral. Whatever that means. When did you decide to run?
Oh, I'd say probably a couple of years ago in January of 2018. I had been out of politics for about 10 years up to that point. I had last run for state rep at that time, that would have been the 82nd district before the redistricting. And so that would have encompassed Crawford, the 2 townships in North Marion and Wyandotte County. Because of the Great Recession and everything else, we had to shut our business. We had to sort of like reinvent ourselves, my wife and I, and I have done a number of jobs in that time period, but it was time for me to kind of let the politics go for a little bit, which has always been a passion throughout my life. But in 2018 in January, I'm sitting there watching Governor Kasich on national television, Meet the Press, deride the Democrats, putting us down, and saying, I don't even know what they stand for anymore. And part of me was pretty angry about that, particularly coming from him.
Yeah.
And the damage that he's done to our state over the last 8 years. But the other part of me kind of agreed with him. I wasn't sure myself. I said, what happened to the Democratic Party around this area? For Ohio, and nationally, of course, but particularly in Ohio and in our area.
We lost our footing.
We lost our footing. We lost our way. We walked away from, you know, the teachers, the farmers, the unions, the trade agreements, outsourced our jobs. We lost that contract, that social contract that this party has had. And the direction, I mean, they went the Wall Street way in the 80s. They started chasing that money. This is way before Citizens United. There were decisions that were made by the Supreme Court in the late 70s, 79 and 80, that started opening up the corporate doors for unlimited money. Citizens United was just the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
But so, and I sat down and I thought to myself, well, I'm not going to just bang away on the Facebook feed like I had been, driving my wife crazy. I punched out a 26-page paper, a blueprint for Ohio. that it was a culmination of a lot of the ideas that I had been writing down for years, dealing with mass transit, building new infrastructure in the state. I've been a proponent for mass transit long before they were talking about the 3C corridor.
Let me break here because we do have a caller. Hang on.
Go ahead.
Hello, caller. You're on the air with Craig Swartz. Hello? You're on the air with Craig Swartz. Hello? You know, I have a terrible time when I can't get this to work. Let me try one more time. Oh, I lost him. All right, please call back, caller. I'm sorry about that. Continue where you were. I'm sorry, Craig.
Oh, that's okay. And so in that paper, I had written down ideas about energy, education, the environment, labor, immigration. I even touched on that and wanted to present a holistic approach to how we could tie all these sectors together and reinvent our economy, get it back to the future. And we had, as I said, had been going backwards for quite some time under Republican leadership, one-party rule in this state for the last 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
Kasich had done an enormous damage to the local governments. I knew I've known Republican commissioners in my area that were disgusted by how much money they had lost. He had taken half the local government fund, centralized it in Ohio, and then decided, well, okay, here's what you guys are going to get in return. And so by putting that those ideas together, I started pitching it to Joe Schiavone, who was running for governor at that time, Rich Cordray, some of the other statewide candidates. And then I rejoined my local Democratic club, the Wyandotte Dems. I started participating in their meetings. I was shortly thereafter elected to the Central Committee. They liked my ideas. They endorsed them. And at that point, I started helping out a local candidate, Mary Pierce, who was going to run for state rep for the 87th. But I was also starting to formulate that I was not going to run for state rep again, possibly, but looking at 2020 and eyeing the state Senate seat. Now, that was even before I knew it was going to be an open seat. Mm-hmm. I was going to do it anyhow. I knew that 4 years ago, Dave Burke had no competition.
Yeah,
he ran unopposed, and I just can't stand that. I mean, we live in a democracy, yeah. And it's just like, come on, we got to step up. But that motivation, that appeal, I'm sort of like that old FDR kind of Democrat. I believe in the big picture, the big ideas, and the economy. What we had been doing, even though people were like, "Oh, look at the stock market and everything else," the real economy. The people that had suffered from the Great Recession, we had never really recovered. I was one of those guys, those 50-year-olds, that couldn't get a full-time job. I was getting aged out. I'm coming up against the high school kids, the college grads, and everything else. I mean, 9 million people were laid off in the Great Recession, and I was one of those guys that were underemployed, having to work 2 to 3 jobs. But the other thing that happened was during this time period, because I was working so many different kinds of fields, and I was a factory worker, I was a truck driver, I was a substitute teacher, insurance salesman, I got my real estate license, it was furthering my education, my background, expanding my background, I could and enabling me to talk to a wide range of folks and sympathize with their plight. I have a great deal of empathy for the people that have struggled these last 10 years, and now compounded with what we're going through right now.
Yeah,
this is a quadrupling of what we went through in the Great Recession. So I feel that at this stage in my life, I'm one of the best prepared candidates to run for this office.
Good. And that's what the Democratic Party needs right now. I felt I was a good candidate to run for state representative, and I ran with Cordray and several of the people that you mentioned. Rich and I got to be friends, not great friends, but friends, and I really agreed with him. I thought for sure he was going to be the governor. I knew that the chance of me winning my district state representative was very slim, but I had good faith for him, and we all got pummeled in that election. And I don't know what happened to the Democratic Party, and it's interesting that you have some ideas about what happened to the Democrat. Now, I notice your opponent, and I do want to mention Bill Renicky as your opponent. And Bill, you're welcome to come on. This is your invitation to come on. We'd love to hear from you, hear your alternative ideas about this. But he by the way, is the he's the whip, the majority whip on the state. No, he was the whip when he was in the House. And now he's been in the Senate since.
No.
He's new. He's new to the Senate.
He's been in the state House since 2011.
Okay.
And he is term limited himself, so this would be his final term. And he's doing the what they do, the shuffle.
Yep.
Both parties do this.
Yeah.
So what they'll do is once they're term limited in one House, they're going to slide over and run for the open seat. In this case, Dave Burke is term limited. I believe he's running as county commissioner in Union County.
Okay.
And so the seat is vacated. Bill Reinicke thought he was just going to slide over very easily, but he had a kind of a tough fight on his hands with Melissa Atkinson. Mm-hmm. And Melissa Atkinson, I will say this, exposed a lot of weakness there.
She was on our station and was very aggressive.
Well, yeah, and but rightly so, because she was seeing the same things that I'm seeing. The status quo has cemented these guys. I mean, the gerrymandering and mm-hmm. you know, all the money, the corporate money going into these guys' campaigns, the various groups that do contribute just say, well, you know what, like in your case, they felt like, well, he doesn't have a snowball's chance.
Yep.
So we're just going to contribute to the incumbent and keep the incumbency in there.
Yep.
And that all that does is further cement the hold that the one party has on state politics.
Absolutely.
And what Melissa was doing was trying to expose the corruption at that level. And I thought she did a good job, and aggressive as she was and everything else, there was some truth-telling there. Mm-hmm. So she was trying to say, this guy isn't going to do anything for you. And that's what I'm saying, too.
It's amazing. I was outraised by 20% or 20 times by my opponent. And the thing that bothered me, that I was outraised by her, even with unions, which I would think that most people would know there are two things that Democrats do stand for, and that's unions and also women's rights. And she absolutely didn't believe in women's rights. Well, I guess she did believe in women's rights, the women's right to not say that she needed an abortion.
Yeah. But,
and you're kind of facing that, too. Your opponent is very similar, when I read through his ideas, to Tracy, who is my opponent in this.
Yeah, it's the standard Republican playbook on that. In terms of restricting women's access
yep.
to proper health care, restricting their access to safe procedures with respect to right to choose.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but I believe, and I addressed one of Melissa's groups early on before the pandemic basically shut us in. I believe very firmly in the Constitution. And
That's a change for politicians.
I know. And you have to respect free will. Mm-hmm. And as much as, and when I talk to this group, and I said, look, I says, I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment. I'm not here to take away your guns. But just be advised that if you take away the woman's right to choose, their free will, then you are on a slippery slope to losing your rights to bear arms.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's very similar.
Well, now let's talk about that. Since you brought up the Second Amendment, one of the things that I struggled with was the Second Amendment, because there are a lot of farmers in my district, which is mirrored a little bit by your district, and farmers feel they need to have, and I have nothing against them having a shotgun or something to kill the varmint that's killing the chickens or whatever like that, but it gets way out of hand. And one of the things that I find is way out of hand is carried and concealed. Well, first of all, I don't like the fact that just about anybody can get a license to carry and conceal. Well, I know there are some rules against it, but it seems to me that I know people that have a carry and conceal license that would scare me if I knew they were carrying a gun, but also the fact that we allow them to go into a liquor store, or we allow them to go into a bar. But they can go into a bar carrying, if they have the appropriate license for carrying concealed.
Well, that always comes down on the decision by the private owner. So if establishment. So the private owner decides to ban anybody bringing any kind of firearms in, that is their right to do so. Those are private establishments. And a lot of times gun groups get upset about, well, I have the right to carry that anywhere I want. It's, no, you don't.
Right.
In a public space, more than likely you do. But in a private space, if that tavern owner decides, hey, I'm not going to, he has every right to put that prohibition right on his front door.
We struggled with that at the when I worked at the credit union. That I had a man stand at the front door and get scream in my face because he was allowed to carry a gun in there. We had a sign right on the front saying, "We do not allow you to carry it." We didn't even let people wear dark glasses in the credit union, let alone carry a gun in.
Correct. The thing that I trying to inform the public about when it comes to the Constitution is that the Founding Fathers were very good about enumerating our rights. Thomas Jefferson explicitly wanted the Bill of Rights written down. Now, John Adams and Alexander Hamilton did not. And they were for a centralized government.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Jefferson was a true libertarian. And he foresaw that we need to have the rights written down in explicit form because we want to make no mistake about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, later on...
He had written more down.
Yeah. But what is not enumerated is the citizens' responsibilities.
Right.
What is expected of us to uphold the Constitution? What's required of us? And these are the implicit things, what has tried to be explained over the centuries is that we have responsibilities. What Jefferson said as much, and I mean, if you read some of the Federalist Papers that Adams and Hamilton put out, they ascribe to some of this as well. But we have responsibilities to educate ourselves. Because that's what Jefferson was always warning about, is if we don't educate ourselves, if we don't participate and talk about politics, do not, I mean, I can't tell you how many times people, oh, well, you know, we don't talk politics at home, or I can't talk politics, you know, in this situation. No, you should always be discussing politics. That's how you become better informed.
Mm-hmm.
And how you could go and verify your sources and think through these issues. The responsibility, I always tell people, yes, you have rights, but you have a responsibility because of the social contract that the Constitution implies. We signed up. We're a citizen of the United States. You're signing up to adhere to the rights of others.
Yeah.
And how you participate in this society. And that's really important. So the responsibility has to be on the part of the person to say, you know what, adhere to what you're saying. I ascribe to what you're saying, and I'm going to adhere to that, and I respect that, and then vice versa, you respect my space and my rights as well.
Thus, we have rules about you can't have a machine gun, or you can't drive a car without a license, or without
you can't go into a theater and shout fire.
Yeah, there are lots of contracts.
Freedom is not absolute.
Absolutely, it's not absolute. Yes, there was a question I was going to ask you about that. Now I've lost it.
You wanted to ask about standing your ground?
Oh, yes, stand your ground. Now, stand your ground. I was watching a video from Indiana where four or five, maybe six white gentlemen cornered a black gentleman up against a tree. One guy called for, where's a rope when you need one, that sort of thing. So it was obvious that they were considering lynching this guy. Now, it probably wasn't going to happen, but the fact that the guy could have felt frightened for himself, it seems to me he could have pulled a gun out of his pocket and blown them all away. But yet we don't think about that side of it. We think about, well, I have rights. Well, maybe you don't have all. What do you feel about the new Stand Your Ground, which is coming before our Congress right now, the
Correct.
Ohio Congress?
Right. Stand Your Ground, for those that are not familiar, is you already, let's just digress for a second. What you already have is the self-defense rule.
Right.
All right. So you are perfectly within your rights to defend your person and your property if the situation arises with whatever means. And the stand your ground, though, extends that sphere. So it's going beyond your house. It's going beyond your person. And, for instance, the George Zimmerman case or the Ahmaud Arbery case in Georgia, the most recent one, where that is flagrantly violating. They went after, you know, in those cases, went after those people and killed them.
Yeah.
And stand your ground basically provides that vehicle. Yeah. It allows these people, oh, yeah, well, I felt threatened, so therefore I had to go over there and maybe – get in my car, and I had to, you know, chase that person down and everything else.
Yeah,
that's what stand your ground has the likely effect, and so you are going way beyond defending your home, defending your property, defending your person within a reasonable, let's say, sphere. Mm-hmm. You know your personal space. So I'm opposed to that. I think that that's going way too far. You could open the door to vigilantism that you've never seen before.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that. Absolutely afraid of that.
And it goes hand in hand with that. And I've spoken with a lot of responsible gun owners who already have concealed carry licenses, and which I respect, is the open carry without permit, which the General Assembly is also considering. And again, you are opening the door to something that you are going to lose control of.
Start wearing them on Main Street on your hip.
the one thing that I've always been a proponent of it with the concealed carry is the training, the safety training that goes along with it, and the proper licensing. And when you have a concealed carry license, you are then put on a database. And a lot of people don't know that, but that's a national database. So, again, that's the proper registration, the proper tracking. Gun owners, responsible gun owners generally do not have a problem with a lot of these regulations, because at the end of the day, you want to promote gun safety, common sense gun safety, proper storage, proper handling. More often than not, and I believe that this statistic from way back when I was growing up still bears true, that more often than not, when perpetrators are breaking into homes and people have their weapons, their own weapons are used against them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that. I don't know if it's still true.
I'd be very much interested in seeing if that's still true. But if for decades, that statistic always bore up because they were not properly handling their weapons. They didn't have them stored properly. A number of things arise. But the other, getting back to this responsibility, this whole thing, we want to track the guns as best we can, and the registration and all that. If you are a responsible citizen, responsible gun owner, then you're doing your duty as a citizen. Those people, when they say, well, only the criminals are going to have them, well, good. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to work. We're going to be able to go in after and get them.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll know who's the bad guy.
Yeah. Good people stand up and are responsible citizens and don't mind the registration part. The ones that don't, They're the ones that should be arrested.
All right. Now,
go ahead.
We have lots of people that when I was running for office, we have lots of people that can cite all sorts of statistics and stuff like that. And I found that quite often the statistics I was cited when I went home, and I do a lot of research when I go home, was old wives' tales. Not based in fact. And so you've got to be very careful about all those facts and figures that the NRA puts out. Now, I have nothing against the NRA. It started as a wonderful organization to promote conservation and treatment of animals. And it's unfortunately with the leadership that they have, it's kind of gone a little haywire.
Yeah.
But you're going to have people arguing. I'll guarantee you. Yeah. You will have people that disagree with you.
Yeah.
But the thing that always bothered me is, though, people believe in the United States, about 70% of the people believe in good gun ownership and
Correct.
Responsibility. So about the same number of people believe in women's right to choose.
That's right.
And yet, for some reason or other, the people of Ohio seem to vote against both of those, and I don't understand that.
No. It's the General Assembly that's voting against it.
Well, that's where I was leading.
The one party rule that we have in this state. And that's what's mind-boggling, is that people go, oh, we're a conservative state. You know, we're a red state now. No, we're not. Ohio is and always has been and will be a purple state. Mm-hmm. It's a very much a swing state. We're very, very much in play for 2020.
Especially if we didn't have the gerrymandering.
The gerrymandering has skewed it in such a way. The money has skewed it in such a way. And getting back to, for instance, the powers that be, the money, they're giving it to that one party, and all you're doing is you're perpetuating, you know, this one party rule. The poll after poll in this state support women's rights, support common sense gun safety, support the proper safety net, the Medicaid expansion, which Kasich rightfully went on that, on the right side of that decision. They want local control. I have an opponent, Reinicke. He flip-flops all the time on this stuff, on local control issues. In Seneca County, for instance, the wind turbine, the wind farm construction was a very much contentious issue, and he was for it for a long time until he realized, oh, my gosh, there's more people that are against it. And then he flip-flopped and said, no, I'm opposed. And then he wrote legislation recently, it hasn't gone anywhere, but that was going to give townships the ability to have a referendum to vote whether or not a wind farm can go in their property. That's fine. I'm all for that. But he was opposed to it before. Then he flip-flops and goes against it. Then the General Assembly just passed that law that forbade townships, communities, from using single plastics to make a ban of against the single plastics in grocery stores,
yeah,
and like that. Even though a number of communities, Cuyahoga County and some large counties in our area, said no, we really want to get control of this, and the conservatives, the Republicans in the state house said, oh no, you can't have that local control. You can't decide that for yourselves.
There's a lot of people telling you can't have local control, and yet when it comes down to it, and they might get nailed on it. Oh, yeah, that's all local.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know.
Well, now, I wanted to mention to people, by the way, if you would like to, we're talking to Craig Swartz, who is running for state senate in District
26. And that encompasses, I'll leave you real quick for the folks there. We start, like I roughly call it the Route 4 corridor. So we start in Sandusky County. We go south to Seneca County, Wyandotte, move over to Crawford, go down to Morrill, slide back over to Marion, and then drop down to Union.
Okay.
It's seven counties.
That gives you an idea of where all the mileage he's getting on his car. But also, if you're interested in talking to Craig, please call in. We had a caller earlier that I botched. I'm sorry. Yeah. But the phone number here is 740-383-9944. Let me give that to you again. I'm going to give you about 20 seconds. Go run and get that pencil so you can write down the phone number to call in and talk to Craig Swartz, who's running for state senate. 740-383-9944. What is the one thing that you would like everybody in your district to know you stand for? I know that's a big topic.
It's a big topic.
The
number one thing that I'm pushing right now, which I think will help Ohioans all over, is the creation of a publicly owned state bank.
Oh,
is only one such entity in the country, and it's the Bank of North Dakota, which has been in existence since 1919, and arose out of a populist farmers' revolt against the outside, out-of-state mercantile interests that were controlling the farm prices and everything else, and inhibiting their ability to raise their crops, sell their grain elsewhere, and everything else. It was very restrictive. So they created this public bank, and that public bank has grown to such an extent that has financed all of their infrastructure needs.
Wow.
It provided ultra-low student loans. And even in the Great Recession, just 10 years ago, North Dakota was the only state that had no budget shortfall. They borrowed from themselves when the state was running low. They extended a loan. They didn't have to cut the budget at all.
It's like having a 401k that you can borrow from yourself.
So all of the way it works is all of your taxpayer money, all your fees, everything goes into that central bank.
It's quite interesting.
All right. And so therefore you don't have to be going to Wall Street to raise bonds. You could be raising bonds locally. You could help finance small businesses, small communities on their infrastructure projects. And borrow from, you're basically, Ohioans are borrowing from themselves and repaying back to themselves.
Uh-huh.
And that institution would greatly enhance our financial situation. Right now, Ohio is, we have unfunded pensions. We have bonds that we're bonded out. Mm-hmm. We got the turnpike revenues that are paying on bonds. We probably have a shortfall of somewhere in the magnitude of $30 billion a year.
Wow.
And for instance, take a look at the fact that we had to go to the feds again to help us with the unemployment compensation system, which the Republicans have not done anything against. And DeWine, even just a short while publicly said, oh, yeah, we've known that's been a problem for a while. And it's always better to fix that when the economy is good. Well, you had a good economy,
yeah.
You know, for all these years. What were you doing? These guys kicked the can down the road. So many times.
That seems to be the byword for politics lately.
So one of the biggest issue that I'm advocating right now that will help so many people is that public bank.
Cool.
And I'll give you for instance,
sure.
The Marion Mall, mm-hmm. right? It's been dilapidated for years, almost vacant. You can't keep the tenants in there. I've said this for years. I always had a vision of creating a year-round farmer's market utilizing that space.
I love that
building
idea.
Greenhouses on the backside.
They got lots of room.
You have a year-round farmer's market that will employ lots of people. You're going to be producing fresh produce for your schools, your hospitals, your businesses. And then you may even attract new tenants.
Well, you know, people will say, well, we have a farmer's market downtown, but it's not done very well. It's just kind of...
Well, it'll be fine. I mean, it's a boost. I mean, I'm glad to see it happen, and it beautifies that downtown.
I'd rather have that.
But but this could be replicated across the state. So it's a chance for the local community to take control of that piece of property. And so, you know, a public bank would come in, help finance that with local businesses, you know, provide that low interest, that backstop, that low interest loan. Basically, that's what happens, is that the public bank will loan money to your local banks and then in turn, lend that money on mm-hmm. to the prospective business owner or a community. And so what you're doing is you're taking ownership of something and you're moving forward instead of just waiting for something to happen.
Okay, now I do want to mention this before we get you off the air. It's 12:47, by the way. You have your website is very informative. Now it's a little tough to work your way through it, but you get to that one page where it has every issue, and you click on the issue, and it has an answer to every issue. I love that. That made it very easy
me. My social media guy, Brandon Moody, did such a bang-up job.
That was cool.
Regardless of what happens in this race,
yeah.
whether I win or lose, I will definitely win the best website in the state.
Well,
it's
hands-down. So informative.
It is. It's very good.
It's fantastic.
And I do encourage people to go. It's www.swartzforohio.com, SWARTZFOR Ohio.com. And if you want to volunteer on my campaign, there's a place to volunteer. If you want to donate, and we need all the help we can get, folks. And we're looking for $5, $10, $15 to propel our campaign. I am up against the money machine with Bill Reinecke.
Yeah, you are.
All right? The guy is a self-made, he inherited the business from his family. But
He's a car dealer.
He's a car dealer. He's a multimillionaire, but he's a one-trick pony. When we talk about these Republican incumbents, they get the walking orders, you know, from the state machine. A lot of the legislation that is written, not by them, but by ALEC, which is the American Legislative mm-hmm. Education Council, and that's an out-of-state organization that's dark money.
Yep, very dark.
and so a lot of the legislation, especially when I see legislation coming from, very controversial legislation coming from freshmen
mm-hmm.
representatives.
Yeah, and very well thought through.
Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, no, you didn't write that. You didn't write that. And so, again, we're not thinking outside the box. And this pandemic, if it proved nothing else, We have to start thinking outside the box. We have to start. It's a chance to do the reset, the reinvention.
Absolutely is.
And I was reading, you know, like I said, I was an FD, I'm an FDR guy, and I was reading something this morning that talked about a new WPA. A Works Project Administration, one of the most successful administrations that you know that he created, you know, out of the alphabet.
Certainly would help on the infrastructure.
It employed millions of people. It gave them hope. It gave them opportunity. Artists, writers, you know, it basically reignited the history and the artistic community incredibly. But more importantly, it built, you know, long-lasting structures. You know, that we still, with the parks and you go to Toledo Zoo, that's a WPA project. And
I
the
didn't
bridges,
know that.
Yep, the bridges and everything else that are still standing. And that's what we need right now.
Yeah. What do you, what's your feeling about broadband?
Oh, again, I want to, here's what a great example is something in Pennsylvania. I'll be real quick. We can employ the electricity cooperatives that started in the 30s. That are still in existence today. These are nonprofit agencies. The state and federal government could provide grants, and Pennsylvania did this, a large cooperative in the middle of the state serving 19,000 customers, sent a questionnaire out to its customers saying, do you want us to get into the broadband business? 16,000 out of 19,000 said yes. So they got $35 million in grants, and they laid the cable. And they've got fast internet service in the heart of Pennsylvania. We should be doing the same thing here in Ohio.
It would certainly help our rural.
Yes, and areas. Right now with this pandemic, we do not know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
and really, frankly, we shouldn't be opening the schools.
Yeah, if you're going to have schools online, you need that broadband.
Yeah,
extension.
And again, this is something that the Republican-dominated General Assembly has kicked the can down the road. They've known for years that this has been an issue.
It costs money.
Exactly. and Spectrum and others, they're in the business of making a profit. It's not profitable for them to go into the far corners of rural Ohio and lay cable.
Yeah.
So the cooperatives are a good model, and that's what I would strongly advocate.
Okay, we touched on something right here, school funding. Now, I was involved as a writer for the Athens Messenger back when former Governor Strickland was working diligently to get to rethink our school funding. That's 20, 25 years ago?
Yeah.
It was ruled unconstitutional. It still is unconstitutional.
Four times.
What are we going to do about it?
Well, there's the Cupp-Patterson bill legislation is sitting in the General Assembly. It's a step in the right direction. And so what it reduces the reliance, simply put, it reduces the reliance on property taxes. And that's what the Supreme Court has said. You've got to get off property taxes because, you know, the inner city schools will never compete with the suburban school districts. So you have to get to a point where it's sort of like an income tax basis. In Upper, for instance, we have a hybrid. So we've got a 1% income tax. And it reduces reliance heavily on the property taxes. So they really don't have to get the levies. When Kasich was governor, he did so much damage. Those tax cuts that he implemented from day one, everybody told him you are going to force the local communities and the schools and everything to raise levy after levy.
And they do.
And they fail.
Yeah. They never make it.
Yeah, the majority fail. Here, look at the problems in Marion. You know, trying to get levies passed here, coupled with the problems with your economy, when people are out of work and stuff like that, and you're trying to pass levies.
Yeah, but we have wonderful voucher systems.
Oh,
I thought I'd open that one up too.
Oh, so yeah, again, people do not understand what you're doing right now is you're taking public tax dollars and paying for out-of-state kids to come to Ohio to attend private schools, and that happens a lot.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Oh yeah,
yikes.
And so. I mean,
Betsy DeVos loves you.
Oh yeah. So yeah, this whole thing with people have to understand. Yes, we have to have the ability to send kids to special schools.
Absolutely,
especially if they have special needs. Yeah. I have an autistic son.
Yeah,
and
teach special ed.
Public school system in Upper did a great job with Connor, but in a lot of cases. That isn't the case. So these kids may have to go to a different district and everything else, and that's, you know, you probably need a voucher for that. But the preponderance and what the state representatives and state senate under Republican control, wanted to expand that, and to the tune of almost $400 million of tax money going to private schools.
And we've done so well with it in the past.
And our system, in 05, in 2010, actually, Kasich, 05 was, there was a proposal, but in 2010, Kasich rejected the school funding formula that was going to be passed. That would have addressed a lot of issues.
Well, I just got somebody tried to get into me. I must not be handling my communications very well. Somebody tried to get into me on a question here on my phone, and it went away. Please call in 740-383-9944. I'm very sorry. We're running out of time anyway. But, okay, what? Give me your best elevator speech on why we should elect you. Or have we already covered everything?
I think we've just about covered it. Going back, I'll just recap a little bit.
Yeah.
It's the time that I think that we have to reinvent. This has allowed us this great pause, if you will. And unfortunately, we had to do a number of things to shut down. But during this time, we should have been taking time to reflect on what's important, you know, for Ohio. Where do we see Ohio going in the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years? And this ability, this time that we have right now, capability to reflect on what we're doing, think about where we want to go. And that I've been doing nothing but that for almost my whole life. And we have been wandering the desert for 40 years, to use a biblical reference. And it's time we find our way, come out of this desert, and seek that ground, that good ground that is going to, you know, produce a viable state economy and produce a future for everybody. And it's time.
One of the areas that we have come out of the desert recently, and it was something I did want to touch on, is the LGBTQ movement, which 10 years ago, 15 years ago, was lost in that desert, and now it's blossomed.
Exactly right.
Where do you think the state of Ohio, who is very conservative, at least right now, where are we going with it?
Wrong direction. oh, my God. They're fighting everything. These people are grasping at things that are relics of the past.
Yeah.
And history, they keep saying, well, it's history, it's our heritage, and everything else.
It's the book of Leviticus.
Yeah, it's what past is past. History is always making itself. When you are in the present moment, this is history. And the Black Lives Matter movement and the LGBTQ movement, all of these things are, it's revealing. It's the true reveal. It's truth-telling time. People need to really understand what was going on, you know, with the Founding Fathers. And as much as we revere the documents and the presidents like Lincoln and everything else, these were flawed individuals. People who really understand Lincoln know Lincoln. If you really read him, he was, you know, hung up on the black thing.
Yes, he was.
Okay? Mm-hmm. He wasn't fighting the Civil War for that. He was fighting the Civil War for different reasons.
Mainly to keep the Union.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he always found that, well, you know, the black, they're intellectually inferior to the white man. That's in his writings.
Yeah.
And so what is happening with these movements, it's truth telling time. It's revealing to us what is really important and how we're going to, you know, come together, unify ourselves, overcome a lot of these differences. And hopefully, you know, get to that. I like your shirt, Star Trek. I grew up on Star Trek. To me, you watching that multicultural crew overcome adversity every week, and I thought, boy, we're going to get there. You know, that's going to be my future. I remember my dad took us to watch, 2001, Space Odyssey. And I thought, boy, 2001, man, we're going to be on the moon. We're going to have all these devices. We're going to be doing all this stuff. And what happened to us?
We're stronger together, and I've got about a minute now, so I wanted to get in one last thing.
Go ahead.
We're talking to Craig Swartz. You're running for what district, and tell us how we can help you get going.
Yep, I'm running for the State Senate, District 26. Go to my website, Swartz for Ohio, SWARTZFOROhio.com. Check out what I stand for, all the issues and everything else, like, you know, Glenn and I have been talking about. Go to my Facebook page, Swartz for Ohio. Like my page. Look at my videos. You get a better feel for my candidacy, you know, when you see me in action talking about, you know, the things that we've just brought up. Donate, volunteer. We need to get going politically. Do not be afraid of discussing politics with your neighbors in a civil way. I mean, educate yourself about the issues. Verify your sources. Do all these things to become an engaged citizen, because they don't want you to be engaged.
Yeah.
The powers that be want you to be afraid all the time.
Yep.
Thank you very much. WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. For Jim Lavelle, the man handcuffed to Lee Harvey Oswald when he was assassinated.
So when you're coming out the door with Lee Harvey Oswald handcuffed to you, you're there to protect him. Take me through that walk. What do you see? How did it happen?
All right, well, as I walked through the door, I could see, I've always made it a habit in my career, especially as a detective, if I went into a room where there's more one people around, I did a quick look over of all of them, up and down. So I saw Ruby. He was standing there, and he was holding that pistol in his left hand, pressed against his leg, down just above his knee. Well, he was surrounded by police officers and reporters, but none of them was looking down. They was all looking up head high. And I saw it, and as soon as I saw that, I was already within four or five steps of him by that time. And when I saw it, then I knew exactly what was going to happen, so I began my defense on it, trying to jerk Oswald behind me, and I was moving him behind me when he took two steps forward, and he put him in arm reach, and my reach, I reached over and grabbed him by the left shoulder and shoved back and down on him. But at the same time, of course, he'd switched that gun in his right hand and fired, and
the legendary star of The Facts of Life, Charlotte Ray, Mrs. Garrett.
Yeah. Is it how much of Mrs. Garrett is in Charlotte Ray?
Well, I'm not, you know, they made Mrs. Garrett perfect, which was ridiculous, as I wrote in the book. I mean, they never let me yell at the kids or anything, which most parents, you know, all the kids wanted a mother like Mrs. Garrett. Well, she wasn't real, because most mothers lose their temper sometime and they get mad, and so on and so forth. Anyway.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.